And I'm just scanning the list of attendees. And I'm not seeing any new names on here. But if there's anyone joining this evening for the first time, if you could please put your hand up, that would be great.
Do we have no Malcolm this evening?
Malcolm has not joined yet.
I don't think Malcolm will be back until tomorrow.
All right, he's back tomorrow. You're right, John. He's back tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got two new folks this evening. Tarek, do you want to just identify?
Sure.
Yep, go ahead, Tarek. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tarek Al-Khatib. I'm a colleague of John's. I'm with Metrolinx, and I'm in the design division.
Great.
So I'm listening in today just to see how what actually happens.
Great. Thank you, Tarek. And Manuela.
Manuela Estrate, Design Division Metrolinx, same as Tarek.
All right. Thank you. And we have Adekonumbo. Sorry if I mispronounced your name there.
Okay. It's Adekonumbo. I'm Design Division, similar to Manuela and Tarek.
Okay, great. Anyone else attending for the first time this evening? Rosemary is waiting to get in. Don't see Rosemary yet.
She's waiting to be let in, it says here. And so is Paul Batterwich.
Oh.
They're somewhere trying to get in.
Oh, here. Got a bunch. Let's see here.
There's Rosemary now.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, here I am.
Sorry for keeping you waiting in the lobby.
I went to an earlier link. Is it the same link every time, or
you have to go to the new
okay.
meeting invite?
Okay,
well, yes.
Here I am. Okay. Thank
and
you.
And I'm just looking for Paul.
I'm here. Hi.
Oh, there you are, Paul. Hi, Paul. Welcome.
Hi. We're just having a last bit of dinner, so I don't want to be rude.
No problem. Okay, thanks everyone. I think we can get started now. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this evening. Just a quick reminder that we are recording this evening's session, and we will post all the materials, including the video recording of tonight's session. We will post those on our Metrolinx Engage website. And we do not have any of our elected officials with us this evening, but I'll keep an eye out for them. Perhaps they'll join us while the meeting is in progress. And before we get into the details of tonight's meeting, I just wanted to open our meeting this evening with a land acknowledgement. So let us take a moment to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of Indigenous peoples, including the Anishinaabe and the Haudenosaunee and the Wendat peoples. We are all treaty people. Many of us have come here as settlers and immigrants in this generation or generations past. Metrolinx declares its commitment to building meaningful relationships with Indigenous peoples. We acknowledge the historic and continued impacts of colonization and the needs to work and the need to work towards meaningful reconciliation with the original caretakers of this land. We acknowledge that Metrolinx operates on lands covered by 20 treaties and that we have a responsibility to recognize and value the rights of Indigenous nations and peoples and conduct business in a manner that is built on the foundation of trust, respect, and collaboration. Next slide, please. I wanted to just spend a little bit of moment sharing a safety moment with everyone this evening. This is an incident that I witnessed over the weekend, actually. So this is just related to cyclists and the streetcar tracks. And I know there are many streetcar tracks in your community. And just a reminder for those that are cyclists, whether you're a cyclist or in a vehicle or as a pedestrian, I came across a situation where a young man was riding his bicycle and his wheels got trapped in the streetcar tracks, and he was unable to recover from that. And he went over his handlebars and landed on the road in front of an oncoming streetcar. So I was in my vehicle, and luckily I was quick enough to kind of pull my car into the oncoming streetcar, because I didn't want the streetcar to run over the young man. I would have rather had the streetcar hit my car. I jumped out of my car. But just a quick reminder that if you are cycling and crossing a streetcar tracks, to cross on a diagonal. And I've shown a little diagram there. And I've also included a few tips. And there is some really great resource information on the City of Toronto cycling education page that I do encourage cyclists and non-cyclists to check out for more information. So thank you. And with that, I think we are going to get on to the next slide. All right, Teresa, take it away.
Sounds good. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Mark, it does look like there's a couple people that are still stuck in the lobby. I don't know. I tried to admit them, but maybe you can troubleshoot on your end while I'm going over rules of engagement. We've got a large group with us here tonight. I think I'm looking at about 40 people total in our meeting. So just a couple of rules to keep our meeting moving smooth tonight. Please remain muted at all times unless you're called upon, and we will take questions throughout the presentation. This is a meeting intended for open dialogue, but please use your hands up icon on the team site, and I will call names in the order that they're received. We ask that everybody tonight be respectful to all meeting participants and allow people to set a chance to speak first before taking a second turn to speak this evening. Video is encouraged but not required. And for everybody's awareness, as Mark stated earlier, this meeting is being recorded and we will share this information generally online. Next slide. Okay, so we had a small group meeting last week to start to talk about some of the TOR updates. I've got a schedule update. We're gonna and then talk about the station renderings tonight. And then next steps, we'll talk about the design brief that's being prepared for your review as well. So this was our hope to get through the 2 hours this evening. I think it's a pretty dense conversation, especially when we get to the renderings. We know you guys want to talk through your comments related to those renderings and how that feedback will or not go into the design brief. Any questions or changes on that agenda before I get into an update on the schedule for the design competition? No? Okay, Shelley, thank you. Okay, so schedule update. I have good news and bad news. Good news is we have more time to conduct the competition. Bad news is that we've been given a mandate by the Premier's office and the MTO that we cannot have any large public engagements during the observation of Ramadan, and then there is a blackout period for the government engagement during the election cycle. So we're still waiting on some hard dates for the election cycle, but unfortunately we've been told we can't go out for large public consultation in these time periods. So that's bad news in a couple of ways. I think it does provide us some opportunity to continue working with hand in hand with you and doing some other type of engagements, but we won't be able to engage in the larger public scale activity like the walking tour, or at least the walking tour for the shortlisted firms and that visioning public engagement, and then pushing forward the design contest public presentation as well. However, what we have done is extended the schedule to get inputs into the contracts in that month of August. So we've actually extended the schedule of working with the shortlisted firms, which will start at the end of May, and we'll extend that until the last week of July. So it's a really good time period now to engage these design firms that are shortlisted, to do the right type of engagement, both upfront and at the back end, and give the design teams a pretty good schedule to activate their design. So instead of 3 to 4 weeks, they now have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, 5 to 6 weeks And we have a little bit more time to go back and forth and to do some of that upfront engagement with you. So that's good news, bad news. I see a question already, so I'll stop really quickly, and then I'll just walk you line by line how we're going to move forward in making sure we have your input on these different elements of the RFP before in RFQ before we move forward. So Jennifer, go ahead.
Yeah, just understanding you're saying you can't do in-person public consultation, does that preclude online?
For large scale engagements, yes. So working hand in hand with you in this group, as long as you guys are okay working through the Ramadan period, we'd like your input on that. You know, I don't know how many people may be observing Ramadan right now, if that's a part of your group. And so we're open to that feedback. But with the large general public, yeah, especially during Ramadan, we are not doing any type of public consultation from a large scale perspective. So, and unfortunately, there's really nothing we can do about it. It was a mandate that came down to us. So that now, let me put that caveat down there. So the last line, if you can see it, I know it's very small text, but that green line that I put really from the first week of May into really the end of July, we can do one-on-one meetings. We can do other stakeholder groups like, you know, you guys have mentioned getting out to the community now, maybe doing a walking tour, you know, during, you know, with some members of the CAC, which is some of our team, getting out to the general public in other types of formats or forums like a survey or whatnot to get some input. So we can do some of that between now and when we do the large scale public engagement in June.
It's Jennifer again.
Yep.
So go ahead. You're saying could be a survey online that people could fill out in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yep. There are things that we can continue to do between now and that in-person engagement in June that I think can help us to achieve things where you've asked us to socialize some, like the zones, for example, what the community sees in the zones and other, you know, things to highlight and celebrate in the community. So yes, we can use that time period to do things like that, Jennifer. Okay, I'll walk through hand in hand. So what the way that we broke up this schedule is developing the terms of reference, selecting the jury, and then going into implementation. So just kind of walking through a schedule of activities so you understand where we are and what we how we intend to move forward. The draft POR has been developed, sent to the city or sent to procurement, and then sent to the city to review. We're expecting their comments back this week, and we'll turn those around and send the document, the Word document for you and your group to review and provide your edits and comments on as well. We're hoping that comes this week. We've left 2 weeks for content review of that. So if we need to go back and forth on some of your comments that are meeting next week, we can do that. We are also developing the design brief, which talks a lot about the opportunities and constraints and really defines the zones from the exercise that we went through and really kind of sets the parameters for what we're asking for in the design competition. That is in development now. It will go to the city this week, and then we will talk about elements of the design brief at our meeting next week, and then we'll get your edits on the design brief the week of April 11th to the week of April 18th, again, leaving time for some iteration between us and your group. And then we'll finalize the TOR and the design brief the week of April 18th and 25th. And then that will go into the RFQ, which will be issued the first week of May. Once we get that final TOR after your comments, then we can go into selection of the jury. We can actually start that now. I think we took your feedback from our meeting last week, and I've got some updates on that. So we'll talk about that next as we go through the TOR elements. But we can probably start to get that jury in place pretty quickly. We definitely want it in place by April 11th so we can start to get their input and informed for the review of the RFQ submittal. So. Okay, once we go into implementation, you can see that as the kind of the dotted line down the center of the schedule. will go into the issuing the RFQ. I have a typo there. It's not the RFP. It's just the RFQ. So that's step one of the RFQ process. RFQ is going broadly to the design community from the and international community from the list that you guys have prepared. We've added some names and we'll talk about how we're going to do that tonight. The jury and procurement will score. So the RFQ, remember, has to be daylighted for 3 weeks. So that will be the first 3 weeks in May. Then we will select and shortlist firms the week of the 23rd. The jury will and Metrolinx procurement will shortlist. We'll issue the RFP for 3 weeks from the last week of May and the first 2 weeks of June. And we will get the shortlisted teams prepared to move forward, moving into that public engagement, which we're intending right now to be the third week of June. After that, the design teams will go into a blackout period, which is a 5 week period. Then we come back together the first week of August. There'll be the public presentation. So the design teams will present to the public, we'll take that feedback, and then the next day they'll present to the jury and the jury will deliberate and select that winning firm. And then we'll use the rest of the month of August to validate constructability and implement the design concepts into the tender. So we're going to be going through an iterative process with that design team to get their concepts into the design materials for that tender package. There are different creative ways we're looking at exploring implementing those tender packages, whether elements of it go into a later tender, we're still evaluating. But this is, I think, leaves us enough wiggle room to figure it out between now and then how we're going to get the input into the different tenders. And then, like I said, we can really start to kick off some of the community engagement. Once we get this TOR in place, we can start talking and daylighting the competition to the community at large, as well as to other stakeholders, and do a different type of, non-big scheduled public events in that time period. So. Okay, questions. Shelley, Paul, Tony, you're the first three faces I see on my screen, so I'm just looking at you to see. Questions, thoughts, thumbs up? You happy with the schedule? Any concerns? Go ahead, Shelley. Oh, you're muted again for some reason.
Sorry, I hit my hand off and then put my mic back to mute. Anyway, I'm just wondering, when you're saying there's a potential for community engagement prior, and I'm looking at the long green line. Do we want to do another walking tour? Do we want to host something in terms of community engagement? I'm just throwing it out there for CAC and community members. Something we could be doing, as we launch the RFQ.
So keep in mind that Metrolinx has to be silent about the, in that RFQ advertisement period, Metrolinx goes into a cone of silence. It's a procurement role, so they can't answer questions within the terms of the RFQ itself. So just keep that in mind. And let me just clarify your question. So are you asking the community if your community advisory committee wants to do your own engagement? Or are you asking,
the community? If the community sees the, if we could do something before the walking tour, which would happen in June, mid-June. Anyway, we can take that away and have a discussion about that. We don't have to take up everybody's time. But other thoughts on the timetable?
Yeah, I've got Paul and then Tony. Go ahead, Paul.
I think it does open up a lot of opportunities for more public engagement. Unfortunately, a lot of them could happen through the competition period. But nonetheless, it's an opportunity to get it more publicized. So I think there are better opportunities for engagement as well as for perhaps a better competition. But I look forward to seeing the list of competitors. The complete list would be worthwhile seeing as well. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Tony and then Rosemary.
My only comment was I agree with Shelley and Paul. I think it's very important that the teams who are going to be the design teams do the walkabout or the walk. That's more important, I think. Very important that we make sure that can that happens. Any community involvement before then is obviously all good. And it's a question of us figuring out how to get that process in place and manage it.
Okay, Tony, thank you. And Rosemary.
Yes, I just wonder about if there's an opportunity. Will you be letting the public know, will you be having an open house to tell them that this whole process is happening? Or is the first chance for them to hear about it pretty far along when we're at the design contest stage? And then I'm just, my other comment is just about the jury. I do think we really want to have a walking tour with the jury early on in their education process. Thanks.
Okay, that's a great opportunity that we can start to think about once we get that jury in place, Rosemary, and I'll take a note on that for sure. We cannot have a large public event or like virtual open house or in-person open house right now because we're in the period where we're observing Ramadan, and so we cannot schedule open houses during that time.
But what about early May when Ramadan's first over? Would you do something? Because otherwise people in the community aren't going to know at all that this is happening. Am I right? Or I don't know.
So even what we're exploring doing is more grassroots engagement to get the word out, more advertising and using communication tools to get to the community. We're waiting to see the specific dates of the election blackout period, but if there is a window there, we could potentially explore it. Right now, it's looking like there's not going to be a window from the observation of Ramadan until we've been told we can't get out because of the election. So again, and I think you might have missed that first part, Rosemary, that that mandate is out of our control.
Okay, because I do think that probably the community will be finding out about it. I understand you've got those constraints, but even newsletters, you can't put out a newsletter between now and then?
Yep, we can do all sorts of different communication.
Okay, I think that's going to be important.
Yep, Mark, I see you've come on. Do you want to mention?
Yeah, I think there's things that we can do in the digital space to help promote the work that's taking place here. It's just unfortunate that we won't be able to host anything much larger than that in sort of a public forum, but we can be creative and innovative, and we'll look to using our newsletter and social media, et cetera, to get the word out.
Okay, good. I think that's really important because I think people will be hearing about it. And, if they don't have the right information, they're going to interpret it in a way that's, not that positive. Thanks.
Great. Okay, Shelley, go ahead. And then Tony.
When do you see the notice of RFQ going out in this? And also, yeah. I'm with Rosemary. I really think... We need to get this out into the media like now, and I really think it's beneficial for the government to be promoting this as on top of their Ontario Line renderings. I just think this is really good news, and I see that you can't work with these dates, but I think we need to really try and get word out about this competition.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think that we can be, as Mark said, pretty creative about how we do that. And we'll put our heads together and put that as an agenda item for maybe our next meeting about how we intend to use this space to continue the conversation and make it a little bit bolder or broader. Okay. Great. Thank you, Shelley. And Tony.
I just have a question on Ramadan. Are we going to make a decision tonight? Because it's starting next week. And I think what I hear you saying is from a public representation point of view, we have to be sensitive. But in terms of our design working group, I don't see why we aren't able to continue for those that are able to, which I presume is many of us, based upon the membership that comes to these meetings every week. So do you need direction from us tonight on that? Because we haven't got much time.
No. No, we don't actually. So we, you know, right now, I think what I'm hearing from this group is that maybe come back to like this group can continue moving forward and engaging the way we have been engaging, as long as you guys are okay with that. And we're committed to doing that. We have some representatives on our team that are observing. We'll work with them on their needs as well. So now what we are seeking tonight is just buy-in on this schedule. I'm going to try and cement this schedule in place. It's been moving a lot and things have, you know, going round and round a little bit with this. And so I'd like to try and get this cemented with your buy-in, knowing that we're going to come back with some innovative engagement alternatives here at our next meeting. So, and let's use this time wisely when we can't go broadly to the public. Shelley. Oh, wait, Tony, I'm sorry. Did I answer your question? And then Shelley.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm in agreement with what you're saying. Yep.
I didn't have my hand. I took my hand.
Okay, great. Then if there's no more comments on the schedule, I'll move us into the next agenda item. Again, just the terms of reference, we're trying to get this nailed down and finalized by next week. We presented some of the options or elements of conversation that were still open and flexible at our meeting last week. We went back to the table. We're still waiting on the city's comments. They still have a couple of days to work through their comments and send them to us. I think we agreed on a full week, so they have this week to get that done. Once we address their comments and confirm we've addressed their comments, then we'll send you that Word document, like I said, for your review, and we can revisit that after you receive that next week. But we did have some resolution on a couple questions that you had from us last week. So if you go to the next slide, just really quickly talking about the jury. So there was a couple of questions that you guys had about how do we define who's on the jury and what's the community's say in that. And you guys asked if your community group could be the ones to appoint community representatives. And we ran that through and we're fine with that. So because you guys have been appointed and your participation for the CAC has also been appointed through the counselors or the counselor, we feel that you guys represent and have been asked to represent the community. So you can define who then sits on the jury. So it is okay for you guys to nominate two community representatives and one representative of a BIA. Any questions? Okay, great. Okay, and then related to the design community members, so Metrolinx will engage the design community and members of the existing design review panels. I just wanted to clarify that. We didn't have any criteria for selection for these representatives before, so we put a little bit of meat behind that. And Metrolinx and the City of Toronto are going to evaluate names and select the representatives. Of course, we'll bring those forward for the community to see as well before any final participants are asked to engage in the jury. Okay. Shelley?
When do you want our nominations by?
Whenever you're ready. So it definitely, I think in the schedule, let me just go back to my schedule. I think I said we wanted the jury in place by the last week of April. Yep. Or actually by next week. So if you guys can get us your nominees, what we'll do is vet our individuals. And if you guys can get your nominees by next week, then we'll have the jury in place so we can start moving forward with the qual reviews.
I'm also thinking, I just was thinking that it might be prudent to have for us, but also for our four landscape professional jurists, that we would have a backup in case during these COVID times that we would have a backup for illness or emergencies or something. So we'd have someone in place just in case someone couldn't make the process or got ill or something.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. So we'll do that as well. For and an alternate, and you guys can do two and an alternate for the community reps and then one and an alternate for the BIA. That would be great. Okay, great. Shelley, was that all you had? Yep, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Rosemary, you're
Yeah, I just back to the four design professionals. It says Metrolinx and the City of Toronto will evaluate names and select representatives. But I thought I heard you say you're going to bring us back the names. Are we going to have any vetting or input on those four?
I think what we're trying to do to speed up the jury process is to lean on the existing design review panels, because the vetting of those individuals has really already taken place. And we have a good group of individuals made up of the at the city design review panels and through the Metrolinx design review panels. So they've already been vetted. So we're going to hope that those will, you know, show interest of being on our jury. And once we have that interest, we'll bring it back to this committee to know who we're talking to.
Okay. I mean, maybe if you had a list, we would like to have, you know, to give you our opinion, maybe. I mean, I personally won't know them, but I expect, you know, certainly Paul from our group would know these individuals, and I don't know, would love to weigh in on which ones he would like to see on the committee, if that's a possibility.
Yeah, it's John Potter just stepping in. So okay, we'll take that back to our procurement team, because there are certain areas where the rules get very, they're very fine. So we'll bring you back an answer.
Okay, that's understood. Thanks.
Great, thank you. And Shelley?
In terms of the four professionals, is there any criteria that they can't have worked for either the city or Metrolinx? Or how are you going to look at the relationship between your organizations and the jury members?
Yeah, I don't. So that's the one thing that I don't have on here. So the asterisk.
I can answer that. Yeah. We can't, you know, if you want to exclude panel members who've worked for the City of Toronto or Metrolinx, you know, whether it's city, obviously the Metrolinx Design Review Panel, City of Toronto Design Review Panel, we're even looking at Waterfront Toronto Design Review Panel, which is, you know, that's made up of a remarkable group of individuals and designers. That can't be a disqualification criteria if they've worked for any of these bodies, because then you'll have no one to pick from. But you know, we'll look at issues around active work and stuff like that. But I'm not really, these are professionals, and they've been vetted for these design review panels, because they're not really, you know, they're not going to be influenced by the fact that they want to get future work with the city or Metrolinx. That's not how a professional design jury would work.
I think the one criteria that we have in the TOR, I'm going to pull it up here in a second, was the question that we had last time about the things like somebody living within the community. And I think we did make that a conflict of interest. So like living within the joint corridor area, not in the City of Toronto. So. Okay, so you guys have some time to digest this information. Again, when the TOR comes to you, I just wanted to make sure we were, you know, responding to your request to be able to appoint the members of the jury from the community and the BIA. So if you have any thoughts, additional thoughts on this, please let me know. And Mary, I see you've have a question.
Yeah, I'll just chime in and support what was just said, that, you know, what we don't want is somebody who's in direct conflict at the moment. So they don't have some kind of ongoing consulting relationship with Metrolinx or any of the agencies. So that might include GO. We have to trust you to have some criteria for that. I agree with you completely. We have all sorts of people that do work for everybody, and we don't want to, I agree. We have to make it open to who we want the best. We certainly don't want people that are on the design review panel for the waterfront not able to bid. That would be silly. But just we just have to rely on you guys to flag the conflicts. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And that's what procurement's role is. For sure.
Okay. Great.
Okay, great. Okay, next slide. Okay, we're starting to put forward the criteria for the shortlist selection of the firms. So this is still being vetted. What we've left here is some open-ended questions for you. I think, you know, we started to say, and this will be a weighted criteria. We're working out the weighted process now. And the way that this works, right, is that we release the RFQ, and then we formalize the selection criteria will be in the RFQ. So teams know exactly what they need to respond to and what we're asking for in the response for qualifications. And then when the jury and the procurement team get together to do their ranking, everybody's given a score sheet and you do it by a weighted score. So that's how we go through this process. Some early criteria that we're looking at in the TOR is a score on creativity and innovation within the projects that they or within their firm. We're looking at context sensitivity and the built heritage experience, like what we heard from you as being important to the community. We want to look at relevant past experience by evaluating three relevant projects. And then there's opportunity to add some more criteria for what you as the community want to see weighted within this process. So that's why you see my other here. We're also looking for key personnel, so landscape architect, an artist, an architect, and then an urban planner, really based off of this streetscape request that you had before. So, and this is still draft. We're still waiting on some procurement conversations to occur to make sure that this is right. But we talked about this at our last meeting, and you guys were going to go back to the table to highlight what was important to you. Now you have something of a list to go off of what we're already looking at. So if there's anything else that you want to bring back to us to add into this RFQ, you can start thinking about that and put it into your comments of the TOR. So when that document comes to you, as a community can get together and add to this list. Mary, you still have your hands up. I just want to make sure it's, I think it might be old.
Drop it, sorry.
Okay. Okay, any questions here? Okay. Okay, then we're good to move to the next slide. Okay, text is a little bit bigger than I thought. I made it bold so you can see. So we've taken the list of the firms that you've provided. That's what's bolded. I was just kind of going through my notes from the last couple of weeks, making sure that I didn't miss anybody. So if there's anybody left off here, I might have just not gotten to that list yet, that last email. Then we've added to the list as well. So what you see on the left-hand side is the list that you've provided, the firms you've provided, and then the firms that we've added to the list are on the right. So this list can grow. You know, this is just the list that we're going to do some early outreach to. So making sure that people are or firms are aware that we've got this competition going on. And if you go to the next slide, I can come back to this. But if you go to the next slide, what we plan to do to get the word out before the RFQ is on the street is to email the firm principals or points of contact from each of those firms. We'll make personal calls to those representatives that we know too. So there's a lot of industry connections that we have on the TA team at the Metrolinx, from the Metrolinx team and others that we can lean on, but we'll start to email, you know, and drum up some interest. We're gonna email and call industry organizations as well. So these are, you know, the AIA and other organizations where the industry coalesced. We're gonna reach out to them. And then we're going to start announcing the design competition through the Ontario Line Communication Tools. There's a great blog that has a ton of activity and followers on it. And then we'll use the Metrolinx social media to continue to get the word out right now as well. So if we go back a slide, I just want to bring back up that list. And like I said, I think I might have missed one email where you guys had some additional contacts. So I think I might have to go back to that, but this was originally from the Word document that you sent or the PDF document that you sent with all of your inputs. But we've got everybody on the list and we can continue to grow this as necessary. But we did want you to see the additional firms that we added to the list as well. Any questions? No? Okay. Then we're moving forward. Okay, great. Okay, well, that's what we have right now. So for the TOR, next steps on TOR, we're gonna address city comments and then it's gonna come to you. And then we're gonna start this industry outreach. I mean, we've got, you know, informal and formal ways to start to get the word out. So I think we'll be in good shape to start drumming up interest. I'm excited. So great, Paul, I'm glad you like the list. Thank you. Thank you for your input into that. So. Okay, Rosemary, you have a question, and then I'm going to hand it over to Celia to talk through the hearing.
Yeah, thanks. Just back to the jury selection. I think I heard you say that living in our neighborhood would disqualify people from being on the jury. And I mean, I don't understand why that would be. I would think that people who lived here would understand the context better than anyone. So I'm not sure that there would be people in our neighborhood that you might consider, but I don't know why you would disqualify them just because they live here. Thank you.
So the reason why is because we're trying to, and we had this conversation at our meeting last week where we're, our goal is to make sure four professional jurors have no conflict of interest in being on the jury. And so we removed that. So one of the conflicts was being a local resident. And so we, that could potentially weigh a decision heavier one way or another. And that's why we disqualified it.
But why in the, why would that? I don't understand your rationale for that. I mean, I could understand if they were connected to one of the firms, but surely they will just care to make sure that it's the best possible decision. Anyway, I don't agree with that.
I think the argument could be that the anybody participating has a potential to derive a financial benefit from the project going forward.
Okay. Okay, right. I never thought of that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and also just to point out that the point is that you will have three jurors from the neighborhood. So you do get to appoint two jurors plus one from the BIA. So it's also meant to balance.
Okay. Thank you.
Wait. Julia. Sorry. Wait, I thought what we were talking about was who could bid, not the jury.
No, that was jury.
No, this is about who's on the jury, Mary.
Oh, I see. Okay, then I take my comment back.
But I think Celia's point remains that we're trying to balance and remove any conflict of interest. So, okay, Shelley.
I'm just gonna play devil's advocate here for a bit because, you know, being on the committee for many years, I know a lot of the depth of professional experience we have in this neighborhood. And let's say, one of them wanted to be a juror. I don't know, but I know we do have some pretty heavy hitters that live in this neighborhood in terms of your professional, the four professionals you're looking for. I think, you know, it goes back to the presentation from the community that we live here. I think that there's a vested stake in someone who has that criteria, but who also lives in this neighborhood, that is only going to benefit the competition because the vested interest is that they're going to look at it for the rest of their lives that they live here. So I'm with Rosemary. I think it's kind of petty to exclude someone who would, and we know many who do have these kinds of credentials in our community. I hear the argument on the other side, but I think that it's not a conflict of interest to live in a community. I think it's a bonus to understand the impacts of the project on the community.
No, I agree with you. I mean, Shelley, the issue is the perceived conflict of interest of having professional jurors and living in the community is the same as the conflict of interest of having jurors who are currently doing work for Metrolinx, for instance. It won't get past our fairness and transparency requirements around procurement. I mean, yes, are you kidding? When you announced this, one of the first jurors that came to mind who's on our Metrolinx design review panel and lives on First Avenue and is a, you won't know him, but he's probably one of the most talented up and coming designers in the city and brilliant guy, John Lowen. You know, suddenly I can't use him because he's in the community, though he's on the MDRP. And, you know, I totally understand John Lowen would push for, you know, would be quite objective, but we are, our hands are tied, unfortunately. So I do have empathy for you, just like we have jurors that I'd like to recommend on the professional team who you might not want on the jury selection because they're actively working for Metrolinx. But, you know, one of them is probably the most innately talented designer in the country, and you know we may not be able to use her, and she's on the Waterfront Toronto Design Review panel as well. So we, you know, the procurement rules seem to create obstacles, but it just means that we'll have a different opportunity.
Can I just weigh in on that just to ask, what is the geographic area that you're excluding for people? Maybe you could just share that with us offline. It doesn't have to be right now, but to...
That's a great point of clarification. We should probably put in and very clearly define that. So thank you. We'll add that to some EOR that need to occur. Okay, great. Good comment. Okay, excellent. So that concludes our conversation tonight about the TOR design brief and overall design competition schedule. The next item on the agenda was to talk about the station rendering so we can get your feedback on those. To do that, Celia has put her camera on and taken off her mute. So I will hand it over to Celia, who's our lead architect. Thanks, Celia.
Hello. So we just have a few slides here, and we just want to introduce some of the principles. We're early in the process of developing the reference concept design, and we develop a reference concept design, and then the design that we develop helps us develop the requirements for the project agreement. And we develop a set of design guidelines from that as well. So really the station principles, when we're, you know, as transit architects, really our first one has to be the system reliability, efficiency, and safety. So we're designing buildings, but we're also designing a system. And, you know, all of the benefits that the Ontario Line stations will bring to the neighborhood is that it has to be safe, it has to be efficient, and it has to be reliable in order to, you know, to function as a transit system. Then second, you know, as architects, with all of the engineers that are working on these projects and all of the pressures that are under, we really represent the passenger focused design. We keep our eye on what it looks like, what it's like to use as a facility. And so really there's a high importance on all of the public areas and how the stations fit into the communities. Then, of course, with the development of this scale, we look at the public realm benefits and placemaking. Just the, you know, recognizing, making a station be recognizable as a station. The context and integration, you know, particularly in the Leslieville and Girard stations, really trying to right size the stations and get them developed, you know, with the right size and kind of a modest expression so it's fitting into the stations and not having monumental stations. So we're really trying to break down the scale of them. And also it's the, you know, we're with the renderings, we're trying to illustrate sort of some initial ideas about the materiality. So in this neighborhood of Victorian homes, we're using terracotta panels, ideas about using Corten for the bridges, sort of some warmer materials. Something for the Ontario Line is the use of the wood soffit, which you can see from the ground level. That's kind of the most significant elevation of the station, and we want it to be something you know, warm and not have it as an exposed, like a big underground station, you know, finished in the ceramic tiles, which are like washrooms. So we're trying to give them more of a residential scale, you know, something that fits in that scale. Of course our stations are long, they have to be, but we're trying to get the cross section right so that the station sits low and responds to the context. And then of course a very important part of station design is universal design. We're really designing for everyone, so designing so that everybody can understand how to use it regardless of you know, impediment or a different language. So really one of the fundamental things of universal design is to have intuitive navigation. And so there does need to be some similarity between the stations, but we're really trying to develop stations that don't require, you know, the advantage of having stations above ground is that you can know where you are without having to, you know, have a color-coded station, or you know what station you're arriving at because you can see where you are. Next slide, please. So this is just a simple diagram of the experience. And so this is the big part of universal design, is that it's a predictable sequence, and the sequence is the same. So, you know, you have your entrance. We have our fare gates are located. So where you have to pay a fare is located as close as possible to the entrance to the street. And that's the place where you're, you know, you're using money and so on. And before you go into the fare paid, and then a simplest possible vertical circulation that takes you up to the platforms. And part of the accessibility requirements for the station is that we have redundant elevator access to both platforms. So even if an elevator is out of service, the station is still accessible. Next slide, please. And then another fundamental thing is sustainable design. And one of the things that we're designing for is these stations are not heated and cooled. These are sort of using passive design. We're working on the design of these stations to get natural ventilation, and just to make sure that these stations are cooler than they are. Right now, the design criteria that we've developed is that the stations need to be cooler than they are than the ambient temperature outside without cooling. So we're developing a design with eaves. We're working with climate modeling. So this is just the early, you know, this is just a diagram. This is not the science. So we're working on the modeling. We're working with climate modeling. And we're doing it for a cycle of an entire year and seeing what we can do passively with the design of the station to make them more comfortable in summer, reduce the heat on the worst days in the summertime, and also how to make the stations more comfortable in the wintertime, as well as dealing with things of enclosure and so on. And so here you can see, let's go forward. So here you can see, this is the view just looking towards the Queen Street Bridge. And next slide. This is the context photograph that we've overlaid our rendering into. So if you just step back one, you can see that the buildings on the left and the gatepost, and we're careful when we're constructing these renderings that we're using the accurate scale. So just forward one. So this is the view. Forward one slide. Yeah. So this is the view kind of looking at the largest. And then here, this is looking down Dalhousie Street. So you can see how we have entrances down at grade level, and the entrances are built into sort of the bridge abutments. And we're trying to develop those like lanterns, trying to make them inviting spaces. You can see through, and the idea is that the cladding inside will be like terracotta. There'll be kind of indoor-outdoor spaces. We're looking at the use of Corten on the bridge structure and extending the bridge structure so it looks like the station is sitting on making the bridge appear to be longer. This is helping to organize and make the apparent scale of the station just be the small scale station, which is sitting on top of the rail corridor. We have, of course, the need for the noise barriers, which can be stepped down just locally over the Queen Street, and that's partly to bring the scale down. We wanted to bring the scale of the noise barriers down where we could, and we can because it's the station itself which functions as a noise barrier for the CN trains. Next slide. Yes, and part of it is the working on the scale and materiality, minimizing the impact of the vents. We're still in a process of doing the feasibility testing of the design. The design is still in development. And one of the things that we need to do is to minimize the impact of the vents and other mechanical and electrical requirements for the stations, and making sure that those aren't impacting public areas.
Celia, where is that view from, showing that last slide? Where are we looking at?
Oh, this is looking straight through the plaza. So it's looking straight on at the entrance on the south side of the street. So this is, you can see just to the right, that's where the parking is for the medical center.
For Fontbonne?
Yes.
Okay. So this plaza is just south of Queen Street.
Correct.
Queen is to the left.
That's
yes.
Right. That's okay. Right.
Thank you.
Next slide. And then here at Gerard and Carla, next slide. We're developing, and so this one is developing a bridge. Now, as part of our work on the design of the bridges, is the type of bridge is dictated by a certain bridge engineer logic. It has to do with the length of the span, but we're working with them to develop aesthetic guidelines for the bridge. And so, again, we're at the beginning of this, but we're looking at how to make a set of rules for the execution of the bridge to make sure that it's an elegant bridge. So we're trying to organize, for example, the bolt patterns and the way the beams come together, and trying to make it a simpler and elegant, and the way it relates to the rest of the station. The station runs through and is similar. And again, it has the warmer materials. I'll tell you that this is a very quick rendering. We're working on lighting concepts. We understand that by developing these bridges as much longer, that we've got longer pedestrian underpasses, and we need to do a lot to improve the pedestrian experience walking underneath these. And so we're just engaging with our lighting designer and working on a second draft of these. And I think that's my last slide. If there are questions.
Okay, so Paul and then Shelley, then Tony. So we'll start with Paul.
Thanks, Celia. That's very helpful. Just one question. I was wondering why, if it may help understanding the images, if there was a train in the image, if there was a rail even toward the rear or the front of each of the images, to get a better sense of scale.
Yes, they. Yeah. So we had trains in here, and there's some sensitivity about the procurement of the train, which we're going to know very shortly. So as soon as the trains are procured, we'll put them back in. So there was some confusion about the trains, but yes, we have images of those, and we can put them in, even if we can ghost them in. It helps give the scale. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Okay, Shelley.
Here I go again, wrong hand. Okay, so I had a lot of questions on our webpage, our Facebook group. So one of the ones I had a lot were being able to see this from the west side to get a sense of scale. And I think Paul's right, is most of the comments said it was at Leslieville. First off, it should not be called Leslieville. It is in Riverside. It needs to be called Riverside. Massive, we know it, but I just want to say it again on tape here. The second comment was, again, like Paul said, it's scale. Can we see it from the west side? Can we see more views? Can we see the trains? The other comment I had was, where is the entrance to the station? Is it on the south side or the north side? There was some confusion, and yes, Overwhelmingly everyone wants the entrance on the south side.
There's an entrance on both sides, actually. So on the south side, that's considered our main entrance, and that's where we'll have the station ambassador. Now, the station ambassador is located so that they can see both entrances, but we've kept, it's been important, particularly at Leslieville, to have an entrance on the north side of the street, because one of the chief movements is that people will be taking this, like, treating it like the relief line and coming down, and it's to transfer to take the Queen car then downtown. So we think that that's going to be a heavy movement on the north side of the street. So it's a pair of, you'll have sort of twin lantern entrances helping to activate, like, the underpass. We'll do special things with lightings, but yes, there's an entrance on both sides, and both are accessible entrances. So there are elevators, escalators, and stairs in actually both entrances.
And one last quick comment from Facebook, which I thought was really relevant, is that for the residents on the Degrassi side that are just slightly north of Bonjour Brioche, how bright it is going to be and busy at night, and that somehow there needs to be a delineation of the station area from a residential area. So some kind of screening, vegetation, a division for the residential area. And as you do the view that goes down Degrassi, as you see heading north on Degrassi, yeah, like it's all one station. Like it all just seems quite endless there. And so that I think at night it's going to be exceedingly bright for residents. So yes, thinking about that comment. And then in terms of the Girard Bridge, I haven't got, or the bridge station, I can honestly say everyone thinks it's just overwhelmingly out of scale. It's too big. So can we have more views yes. in terms of that? Because I think as you look at that rail bridge, that structure, I mean, I'm from Edmonton. I spent many years in the mountains. That is, for me, takes me right through the mountain rail overpass bridge. I understand the comment that it doesn't seem to fit with this particular neighborhood. And I guess my question is, what are our options on that bridge? Because I haven't heard a positive comment, really, maybe one.
We had some, there have been some nice comments in the Urban Toronto blog, but yes, yeah, so for this bridge, absolutely, it's an unfortunate view. You know, we were working kind of quickly to produce one view of every station as you know, we got the request for this release. And so absolutely, we're working on more views and also to show a view of the entire station. So we have some simpler model shots. They're not fully rendered, but it just gives you an idea of the scale of the bridge relative to the scale of the station and the scale of the surroundings. So we do have some additional views and some views like some bird's eye view. So you can see how the, you know, what the entire body of the station looks like. And I will just say that one of the things that we're working on is how to get the public area at the ground level is to turn them into the smallest lanterns that we can. And we're kind of looking at the programming of the station and how to get our all of the back of house program and how to shrink that down, because we really want it to appear that the station is really just sitting up on the corridor and it's a small, you know, a small section, and that the entrances are really just the bridge abutments. It's a lantern underneath this kind of this dark bridge. And again, at Girard, it's consistent. Both sides will be entrances serving the different directions.
So are we stuck with this bridge? Is there an alternative?
No. The bridge, again, it's a reference concept design for a bridge. So it has a certain logic. It is spanning a great distance. I think it's over 60 meters is the bridge span, and so that's dictating the type of bridge that it is. And what we can contribute to is how to make it a more elegant or how to make it fit with the community.
Okay, if it's still open for discussion, yes, it has to be that long, but does it have to look like it belongs in the mountains? Can we not get a more refined beam design?
Yeah, we'll take that back, Shelley, to our design team, our engineering team, our structures and bridges team, to see if there what other options were looked at, and we'll come back. We'll put that on another conversation if that's okay.
I think so, because like we said, you know, we want the winning design for the competition to inform the stations. I think if you tell people that these are the stations, then it's going to inform the competition. And we don't want that. We want the process to be reversed. We want that design to inform what happens with these stations. And that is our understanding with this competition. So if that isn't the case, then I think, you know, a full stop here. We better just get this clear, because this is what we're telling the community.
Thank you, Shelley. We'll take that back and see what that process will look like and what options are on the table. Okay. Okay, thank you. Tony.
Celia, a couple of things on the Carlo Gerard or Gerard Carlo Bridge. Remember, this is a new bridge. This is a bridge that's being built on the west side or northwest side of the current train, the GO train bridge. So that's why it looks so massively wide, because it is going to be wider than some of the other bridges that are being built. And that's why I like this angle, because I think you say it's an unfortunate angle, but I think it's a very fortunate angle. When I'm walking out of No Frills down Gerard Street towards the corner, which I do regularly, it's certainly overwhelming to me at this stage. But again, you know, if it's open for some discussion on design going forward, that's fine, to make it less imposing. Also, I've noticed that the other thing on there, of course, is on the right-hand side of your picture where the new plaza is going in, that SVN has designed. You're still showing the walkway going through there. So that has to be this previous discussion on that walkway being closed off to First Avenue, where the new dog park will go in 2030 or whenever the staging area is finished. So that needs to be noted. And I know Teresa knows all about that, and John and Malcolm and Mark and everybody else. So that needs to be taken into the conversation. The third point is the portal. I'm looking at the drawings. It looks to me that you've moved the portal south from Pape Avenue, and it's now coming right into the north end of the, right into the plaza itself in the parking lot, which means the portal is going to come very close to where the north end of the station is. We've not seen those pictures. That's a change on the schematics, but you haven't shared that with us yet. So we need to see what's happening, because it used to be the portal started on Pape Avenue going north at the north end of the parking lot. The current pictures you're showing now show it coming right down beside No Frills, as that's where it goes underground, right in that, where there currently is a Swiss Chalet and a tire store and a sports equipment store. So I need some clarification there. If you can try when you're doing a bird's eye view, if you can show if that's in fact the case. I'm not sure it is, but I'm sensing it. Something's changed there.
We can show that in the context. Show you.
And also, just to put this a quick point for your notes, you mentioned before Dalhousie. It's really Degrassi, Queen and Degrassi. I agree with everybody we've talked about before, Teresa and with everybody else, that the station down there should be called Riverside, not Leslieville is east of Carlaw. And it's lovely to know that Leslieville's close by, but we don't live in Leslieville. We live in South Riverdale or Riverside or whatever. Yeah. Whatever. That's been discussed before. So.
Yeah, I do want you guys to know that we had a good long conversation about how to start making that transition. And it's not, you know, it's not a Band-Aid, it's a process. And then the communities will actually be included in a process to name the station. So, was named this during the project development, but it's not going to be consistent. So I don't know, Mark, if you want to add to that, but that's what we talked about.
The other issue here, for Celia is that this bridge, the Carlo Gerard Bridge, was built in 1930. So it's not being replaced like the Logan that was done in 1962. So there is some designs in archways within this bridge currently, but it is not 5 meters also above grade. It's about 4.1 on Carlo and 4 on Gerard. So the conversation we had was that this bridge, the new one, is going to be 5 meters off the ground like the other bridges. So how's that going to work with the two different heights of the tracks when you're at this station? Because in effect, the GO train tracks are going to be a meter below the Ontario Line tracks, if I'm reading that correctly.
Yes, this is a lower clearance bridge because we're not replacing the existing GO.
Right.
So that's the control point, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Tony, and I took some comments about getting some additional views specifically to the portal as well. So we'll take that back to the team. Thank you for those comments. Jennifer, you're next.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to echo the comments about the geographic area the bridge is going through, which is Riverside. Just continuing to hear that. Don't mind it being referred to as Riverside / Leslieville, but just continuing different staff people and presentations continue to miss that. though, if it's fitting within the local context, obviously it should be geographically correct at the least. Thanks. Also for the Riverside Leslieville station rendering, if you could go back to it, just trying to understand what this group and the whole design competition, like what of what we're seeing is part of that.
Great. So I don't have my, actually I do, I think I have the notes in front of me. So it is the materiality and of the noise walls, for the bridges, it is the bridge abutments, it is the underpass activation, it is the lighting and any public art. And for the bridges, that was the bridges. And then for the retaining walls, which you see over further to the right, it is the landscaping, public realm, the treatment of those walls within that Metrolink right of way.
And then, the intent is that we can work with the selected proponent to work on the transitions and the opportunities between the boundaries between what's in the competition and the design of the station. And I would say that it's certainly the selection of materials, the colors, that kind of thing, and the integration of the stations into the neighborhood, that's certainly something that will certainly be part of consultation.
Did we answer your question, Jennifer?
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. So thanks for, that's really important. Thanks.
Great. Okay. And Rosemary?
Okay. Thank you. And really good comments from everyone else on this call. I appreciate Tony. Those were great. And Jennifer, everyone else. So I'd like to see if you could just explain what the roofs look like. Like, are these completely covered stations? Will they be open to the elements or not?
No, so we're designing passively ventilated stations. So right. We do have stations, but there's a lot of concern, particularly in the wintertime, with any snow, rain getting inside. We need to keep them safe. We need to keep our platforms dry. We need to keep them from freezing, slips, trips, and falls. So we're really looking to create a high quality public environment inside the stations.
Okay.
So they are fully enclosed.
So they are fully enclosed. Okay, that's great. And just back to the station entrances. So I understand now that there are entrances on both the south and the north side, but are both of them on this west side that we're looking at? Is there no entrance from the east side? So if you're walking from Jimmy Simpson's, you have to go underneath the bridge to right. get in. Okay. Just the integration again, I know others have touched on it with the noise walls. It here with this station, it seems we can see what you're showing as far as noise walls and then stepping them down. I couldn't figure that out on the Girard one. And just to clarify here, because I understand that we can have landscaping on the walls of the architecture, so that includes the stations, but where I would like to see a picture that shows this but a little bit slid to the south, so where does this vegetative covered wall end and then the retaining wall begin, both to the south and the north, because that's where the design competition really picks up. And I'm particularly concerned about how the firms are going to come up with a good design for the north part of this side where we're going into the park, and we're going to have these very high walls and a very narrow space for them to deal with, where we're losing parkland and instead we're going to have walls, and how that's going to be coped with. The design firms are going to need really detailed descriptions of the transition areas. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So Rosemary, just on that comment, Claudia and her team are working through that, basically the plat of the entire area that shows where we're transitioning specifically from, the structural walls, the architecture
of the station. You know, I'm not a technical person, so I don't think I said that right. We're essentially handing over a linear map that shows exactly where those areas are. So Claudia's team is working on that.
Okay. And I will just say that, you know, it was interesting to look at the deck of all the different stations and the ones downtown and, you know, King and Bathurst. I mean, you have no problem with stations when you build it underground. It's this trying to put it above ground that is leading to all of these problems. And, you know, I continue to think if we just would put this stupid thing underground, the whole problem would go away. So I just have to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Shelley, you're up.
I would like to second that. I think we wouldn't have climate issues if it was all underground. That being said, is there a provision now to do a noise study levels around these structures? You can see that the canopy, to me, may cause some kind of echoing, some kind of bounce. Are we going to study noise levels around these structures, and can we get a report on that for the community? Also, I had sent a comment to Mark last week that was sent to me by one of my community members, knowledgeable community members, that these structures were architecturally sound, but that neither of them present opportunities for landscape. And knowing that this station in particular borders our parks, I completely agree that all of the cement and all of the marble and all of these surfaces are not integrated into an area that is our community's heart and soul parkland. And I think that is something I'd like for you guys to take away with, because we want to see those opportunities, and we definitely want more of those opportunities in the stations for landscaping.
Yeah, understood. I'll say that we are looking at particularly, you know, reducing the long facades at the ground level, and we're trying to bring, you know, optimize the planning of the station and to bring more of that green wall in, and that completely green wall, because we like that. It helps reduce the scale of the station and that integration into the parks, because it's reaching into a park at every corner. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Okay, up next is Paul.
Thanks. I was just wondering, is there a City of Toronto public art requirement for this that would be above and beyond the competition purview?
No, currently Metrolinx has its provisions only for third party artwork. We don't provide artwork. There isn't an artwork program.
Yeah. There was a program, and it was executed on the Eglinton Crosstown LRT project, but in 2018 that project was canceled when the Metrolinx mandate was redefined. And, you know, part of that redefinition is that our efforts have to be focused entirely on transit projects, and what we called an integrated art program was not part of that core, you know, scope. So yes, that was that program existed. It doesn't exist today.
And for everybody's awareness, go ahead.
I just see that long beam being such a great potential for a beautiful frieze.
Well, and that's
I'm a fan of steampunk, so give me rivets anytime. But anyway,
that's certainly something that we consider to be part of the scope of the competition with the input into the bridge.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see, Mary, I think you're up next.
Thanks.
You know, I'm a lonely voice in the community here, and they just tolerate me, bless them. But I am a person who actually prefers things above ground. And one of the reasons I do is because it's much better for retail and it's much better fundamentally. If I had my choice, we wouldn't be burying subways anywhere. We'd be running above ground everywhere. Just saying. But that's my minority view, and I speak for no one except me. But I do have a question about retail. Is there any discussion going on at all at Metrolinx about retail presence in the stations or adjacent to the stations? I think this is a really missed opportunity if there isn't. I just want to call people's attention to systems around the world where they're putting fabulous little portable libraries into transit stations. I was really heartened this morning when I heard that we've got some kind of a rapid vaccination clinics going on in TTC stations. We should have been doing that a year ago. So any thought about community use, retail, anything about how we have other uses hitting the street? Thoughts? Is that being talked about at all?
It is. Can I yep. call on John?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
There is a retail strategy. We're often thinking about different uses. In fact, oddly enough, you know, there is, you know, sometimes thought, and this is something we negotiate with the City of Toronto, because they have a very, you know, with station plazas, they have a very strong interest in the right. the sort of, you know, what happens on those plazas and how they're designed. We are looking at different retail strategies for station interiors. I mean, as Celia mentioned, you know, we like to keep the station entrance, minimize station entrance sizing, because, yeah. you know, we basically, you're right, when you talk about supports like a rapid vaccination clinic or other supports, that makes perfect sense, and that would fit into the our mandate. Plus, we are looking at, like, as I said earlier, retail strategy for the Ontario line, and in fact for the whole subways program, it's currently under development. But I do want to stress that, you know, Metrolinx doesn't want to compete with, you know, private businesses and, you know, in these neighborhoods.
Listen, but John, I'm not suggesting you open the business. I mean, I assume you have a day job.
No. But
you could be creating economic development opportunities here. You could.
Absolutely. And on our sites that are more remote, that becomes more of an issue. But we have heard in the past that, smaller businesses don't want to, you know, they don't want to see us as providing competition. But again, I don't speak for the retail program. That is being considered, and that'll be a piece that, you know, I can take away and get some information for you, because obviously these stations are transit first and foremost, but they also play a role in what we call social resiliency. So, correct. You know, they're correct. Supposed to, yeah. So that is really more in line with our thinking.
If the retail folks could come on one of these calls, we'd be very interested. It'd be great if these became really vibrant hubs for not just a transit. I just hope we're not regressing to single uses. And whoever's suggesting that competition argument, that's totally ridiculous. Unless you're going to charge, bare bones rent, which
I
doubt it.
I'm just sort of.
I know you're the messenger, but I'd like to hear.
Communicating the information, and I've been to Singapore where, you know, retail and transit coexist very well, and that thinking is being looked at. I just don't have the answers to it for you tonight.
And Shelley may have thoughts on what the community might see, but, you know, the community might come up with some fabulous ideas for tenants in those spaces.
Yeah. Well, these are, you know, ideally a transit station should be also, you know, during emergencies, should it be a place that people can go charge their phones, where there's, you know, becomes a hub of activity. So that thinking always goes into station planning. But again, I'm taking up too much time on a topic I don't have a lot of detail on. So apologies.
Well, we are sensitive about Bonjour Brioche, really, from the beginning of the project. And so,
been there? Have you ever been to Bonjour Brioche?
Oh, I should disclose my conflict of interest. I'm a longtime resident of Riverside. We used to call it Leslieville, but.
I mean, Bonjour Brioche is the most vibrant business. And, they're not going to, Lori is not going to stomp her foot. If you decide to, somebody just said the United Cigar Store. So I just think that's a bogus argument, guys. You know, you're strengthening our neighborhood, and we want more diverse retail and more opportunities. People will then get off the train and come and spend some money on Queen Street, which would be great.
Oh, yeah. Queen Street East will be a destination. And to your point, I'll forward this to our, you know, we have a whole group in Metrolinx that deals with this. And, good. You know, I don't talk to them every day, I will confess. So I shouldn't be speaking on their behalf.
Well, it'd be lovely if we could speak to them, because maybe they want to. Shelley's putting in the chat, what about a community benefits agreement? What about some incubation space for local businesses that can't afford street rent? There's all sorts of opportunity. So I just hope we get a chance to talk to somebody about it.
Great.
Thank you. And there's a great lively chat in the chat feature as well. So thank you for the references to the community benefits opportunities, as well as a new stakeholder group that we might want to engage with, the Retail Design Institute. So thank you, Paul. And everybody loves cigar stores. So we'll go ahead and move forward to our next person. Thank you, Mary, for those comments. I just have to get back to my list. Rosemary, you're next.
Okay, I'm here. Could you just go back to that last slide, please? The one that shows the, yes. So I'm just curious about what is happening in the lower level to the right of the screen. I mean, I'm seeing cars parked there. Is there really still going to be a parking lot? And I mean, could we make the whole thing smaller and have it just be that you go upstairs and do things? I mean, why does it extend so far to the right? What's going on in there, I guess?
Okay, so I could explain, and you know, we can come back with, again, the larger model of the whole station, so you can see it in one piece. But one of the things that we're driven, that drives the size of a station, is the amount of vertical circulation. And we want the circulation to be organized, and it needs to come up in the center of the platform. So you have a stair, you have an elevator, and it kind of drives the length of the station. But we're looking at what we can do at the ground level to kind of to compress the footprint. But it's sort of driven because all of those need to be, you know, it's part of crime prevention through environmental design, is that everything is kind of visible, displayed. You can see as you approach the station, you can always see your next movement, where you're going, and that the stairs aren't hidden, and that we don't have any blind or concealed areas. We always want the passive overlook from the street into the station. We want our station to be transparent, making the station safer, making the street safer.
Okay, so is there going to be parking in front of it? I mean, what are those cars doing there?
That belongs to the medical center across the street.
And so the Fontbon, so that's the next question, is so Fontbon is now overlooking this station. And so I guess to the same point that Shelley was making about north of Queen Street, just facing this is the Fontbon Ministry, where, as you may know, you know, disadvantaged women are living. And so, you know, dealing with the light to them as well as the sound is something that is obviously a huge issue. So not sure how that's being coped with. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. I'm sorry, Rosemary. Mary, your hand's still up. I just want to make sure. I think it might be Shelley next, but I don't know if you put your hand back up. Okay, thank you. Okay, and Shelley, you're up.
Two comments, one question really, and one comment. Actually, no, they're both questions. It's late. Okay, I have to ask, why are there no bricks? I mean, that's the question. Why are you not utilizing brick in a brick neighborhood? And my second question is, why wouldn't we put the entrances under the bridge to lessen some of the impacts to the surrounding community? The streetcar could pull up under the bridge and people just get out. Is that a consideration, or why not?
Okay, so I can answer the first one. So there's always an issue underneath the bridge. Drivers experience it. You have a dramatic drop off in the level of light. And so it's very dangerous to have the streetcar stopping underneath a bridge in the darkness. And so it really, it has to remain where it is, stopping just beyond the station. But that's why the north side of the street is important. That's a very important connection, we think, for the station, people getting off the station and going. But so on the north side of the street, we do have an entrance that is underneath the bridge. Our entrances are tucked in. They are underneath the bridge. We have the entrance on the south side facing, because there is some forecourt area, and we're concerned about the visibility of the entrance, so we were putting it on that side to make it more visible. If we locate both entrances, we're trying to avoid conflict between the different streams of people. On the south side, we also have long-term secured bicycle parking, and so people are dismounting, dealing with their bicycles and so on. So there's kind of more traffic on the south side, and putting that directly underneath the bridge, we're either needing to widen the bridge then, because we have that limited width. It is an increased width, but we want to preserve that for people, bicycles and cars going underneath the bridge. And so we thought it was a benefit to have one of the entrances which was facing onto Queen Street. You can see it, it makes it and gives you some more space for that main entrance. And then brick. So right. we're using going through some of the heritage important heritage locations in Toronto. Some of the old neighborhoods, we take it very seriously that we want to come up with a sympathetic palette of materials, but we're always trying to do something which is very modern. And so we're using the a terracotta panel. So we are using brick-like materials. We're using terracotta, but it's in a modern panel system. And we can come back with more information about what we think that's like, but so that you get the warmth and you get the feeling and you get that it's not a glossy material, that it's a velvety material, it's a soft finish.
Everything in the surrounding is brick, and that's why we think there has to be more reference. There has to be I don't see the reference, and I think it's not me, it's the community isn't getting the terracotta thing. And they're looking for those references. So I'm giving you feedback from what we've got in a very non-scientific way on Facebook, but they're not getting the references, that it's not integrated into the community. And so are there opportunities for bricks? I mean, that is it. This is a community of brick. You live here.
I think we can show more on the whole question of material selection. We can come back with more material.
Okay, thank you, everybody. And Shelley, I think the design competition will hopefully create opportunities for that integration, so people can see the, and I'm hoping too, by having those in-person events where we can kind of touch and feel things, not necessarily like what it's going to feel and directly look like, but it will be a little easier for us to understand what that context is besides just seeing a picture on a screen. So I'm hoping that can help. Okay, Tony, you're up.
Teresa, this brick versus, and Celia, this brick versus terracotta panel scenario, I'm assuming this is part of the design criteria that the jury's going to be, or the design groups, the architects are going to come up with some designs which the jury's going to see, that this is not cast in stone, that they may in fact come up with a different look, different materials. And as long as that's open-ended in that sense, open-minded, I should say, then I think that's good news, that this isn't a fait accompli, because there are pluses and minuses, and I think we can improve on this, or at least I can't, but the design team of architects certainly can. That's what they do for a living. So that's it.
And Rosemary.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask again about seeing the other side, because I'm curious to see how the back of this station touches to the back of the Jimmy Simpson Community Center. And right now, you know, there has been this slope and then there were trees, they've all been taken out. I think that that's a dangerous area between those two. And I wonder if you're just going to take over that space and abut directly, or how are you going to try? And maybe there needs to be some community benefit to the Jimmy Simpson Community Center to try to give a little bit of a facelift to that front of their building along Queen Street to try to integrate in with what is going to be the back of the station. It's going to not, you know, we want to make sure it looks really nice from the other side as well. So I'd like
to say, yes, our station is completely on the west side. So we have the go corridor, so you won't see the station on the west side.
Well, you'll see, okay, the back of the bridge, right?
That's right. That's right. That's what the other rendering of the bridge kind of showed. So it's more like existing. It's almost, it's very similar to what's existing.
So how far, like this, the station covers the whole bridge though.
So no. We have so we're completely on the west side, and so then we have the whole GO corridor, and then you have to the east. So from the east, you won't see the station.
So the GO corridor is not being covered because it's not part of the station, because you can't transfer between. Oh, I'm sorry. Of course, that makes sense. Okay, so if you're riding the GO station, the GO train, and you're in the most westmost side of it, as you zip by this station, you're going to look out the window and see a wall of the back of the station when you're on the GO train.
That's right. And it's glass, it's a pavilion, so it looks the same on both sides. But yes, we can come back with more views just to give you a better idea of
I think we'd all like to see that. Okay, because we will look up and see into it. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think we do need to see that. That'd be great. Thank you.
Sorry, I went to the wrong mute. Okay, Julia, you're up.
Good evening. It's Julia Murnahan from the city, the Transit Expansion Office. I'm just wondering if Metrolinx could walk us through what portion of the bridge is within scope for the design competition.
Mm-hmm. So Julia, is that like right on this bridge or all of the bridges?
In general, so for all the bridges. I mean, if you've got station specific information, that would be helpful, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, we can pull
if
up the old
station specific
that shows specifically what's in. Yep, and that goes into the design brief, so it might take Jan just a minute to pull that slide up. So Julie, I'll come back to that. You're the only person that has but if I remember it correctly, it is the underbridge activation, it's any of like the it's lighting. Actually, you know what might be a better graphic right now is to show, is Jeff Foz on the line? Jeff, can you pull up your, instead of going back to the old bridge, can you pull up the bridge render that you have that was color coded for what's in?
Yes, I was going to say, we presented that two meetings ago. give me a moment, I'll pull it up.
I might be able to pull it up. I'm in our file drive, so let me just give me a second. Buddy. It'll take me 2 seconds to get in here, but I can probably get it, unless Janine, you beat me to it. But it was meeting number 7, not 7.5, but 7.
Okay. That's right.
2 seconds.
I'm working in parallel, so we'll see who gets there.
Okay. It's just going very slow, but here I have it. It's gonna. Okay, I got it. That's it, right, Jeff?
Yes, that's it. And this is the image from the other side, as you were just talking about, Celia. That you can see the station in, under, beyond, identified by the letter S for a station.
Yeah, that's right.
And so this this legend here identifies N for integrated noise wall, not part of the bridge, but it's part of this image, right? The T is T wall, which is the standard retaining wall system running the length of the corridor. The F is the bridge facade. And so to answer your question, that is included, colors, textures, et cetera. L is the bridge lighting. We just say lighting because that's what you would apply it to the underside of the bridge. And A is the abutment, you know, the concrete that supports the bridge. And then S is the station. So there is an opportunity to provide design ideas for the station facades because we don't want to just specifically exclude them. It's an important part of the activation of the space. And so this is a representative example of what's included in the design competition. We're giving it further detail in the terms of reference, but additionally, we'll have these images for the other bridges as well, the other bridge.
Okay, I've got to stop presenting so I can see if there's hands up. So you have to pull that back up, Julianne, now that we found it. But Julia, did that answer your question?
I guess one of my questions on that slide was there's a space between the S and the L, I believe. The facade of the bridge, does that include the whole depth of the bridge or only the only the upper portion of the bridge itself?
Julia, I feel like you helped answer that question before. I think, the bridge structure itself is defined, but whatever type of facade, like the Aurora example that we gave, like whatever goes on there, it potentially covered that whole area, but I don't remember if I'm answering that correctly.
Well, yeah, and we're not, you know, we're not strictly defining how the transitions between one element and another work, and, you know, doing those transitions successfully will be important, and you know, to incorporate the input from the design consultant, from the design contestant. Yeah.
Okay, great. And Jennifer?
Yes. Sorry, you had noted that this was the type of information being provided in the, like, for the design competition. Yes. Don't want to have to point this out, but yeah, you've just mentioned Leslieville Station once again twice. So please do double check all your materials. If you need eyes on them, let us know. We are here to check those. Thanks.
Thank you. I was almost going to edit it in the background while Janine was sharing to see if it would update, but I didn't have time. But I hear you, and I'm trying to catch it as we're moving forward. So thank you for that.
I mean, I also just heard from your presenter that they don't believe the name of the area is Riverside, in that, you know, they used to call it Leslieville. So I think this is part of the ongoing issue. So staff need education. I'm sorry, like, it's very important to us. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I think that I'm going to take down the hands because I think we answered those questions for Julia and Jennifer. And Janine, you can probably go back to the last presentation. I wanted to talk about, if there's no other questions or comments on the renderings, we've got a couple of action items to see if we can bring some additional views. The portal, we've got some West request views, extending views, and the Riverside conversation or naming are kind of the big takeaways. Now, I did want, if there are no other comments on the rendering, we'll continue to work to bring additional views to the community group and expanded views. Rosemary, it looks like you have a question.
Well, I just want to know, how else are you gathering community input? I mean, we're doing our best. I mean, we have a Facebook page. We're trying to gather information and get it to you. But What else are you doing to get him to get feedback on these designs? Thank you.
That's what we're going to do in the green bar. So like that's okay. Where we're going to start with some additional input. Yep. And, you know, with this big announcement on the renderings, Metrolinx has received a ton of comments. You know, Mark can probably attest to the input that they're receiving on them. So it's definitely, you know, we're reading and taking in everything.
Okay. Okay. I mean, we'd love to see the kind of comments that you're getting. That would help us too, you know, because we don't know if we're getting a representative sample or not. So that'd be great if Mark could share when you gather that material into a report. We'd love to see it just for our stations. Thank you.
Mark, do you want to add to that? I see you came on camera.
Yes, I mean, we are collecting that information. We've had a lot, it's very mixed, some really great positive feedback, but a lot of questions. And we're just compiling all that and we'll share that as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Okay, so next steps, just to start kind of teasing the brain of the group so you know what's coming to you. Like I said, the TOR, once we get those edits back from the city, the next review for you will actually be review and comments on the TOR itself, on the document. So that will come to you, if not this week, then early next week to finalize. Depends on how much conversation we have to have with the city to make sure we've addressed their comments on that. Like I said, with the design brief, so that's, you know, the opportunities, constraints, the parameters, the budget, all of those things that make up kind of the guidelines document for the design teams, that's in progress. And that will go to the city this week. And then to you guys, we'll start with a presentation on that next week. We're also putting together an appendix related that has your community presentation. So the design teams have a hold of that and get your vision. In additional public input that we've received from surveys and all the virtual open houses. So that's an additional appendix that we're putting together. And then we've also got an appendix that's what we're calling data room materials. So it's all of the CAD files, like the engineering tools and pieces that the design teams will need to get started. So that's something that it's just, you know, technical details that the design teams are going to need to move forward. I wanted to bring that to your attention that that's what we're working on this week to make sure we're continuing to hit our schedule. Okay, Shelley, question.
Question is, we had also requested to be able to review the RFQ and the RFP. Is that a possibility? We haven't got an answer back on that.
I need to bring that to procurement still, Shelley. I haven't heard back from them on the first draft of the RFQ. Jeff is back in town this week. He was out that week last week as well. So we touched base briefly on that this morning just to get make sure we're getting that draft going so we hit our schedule. So hopefully we'll get a draft this week and I'll confirm whether or not we can send that to you guys. I did see in your comment that you've done things like signed an NDA and gone down to Metrolinx and reviewed things from there. So we're considering that as we're advancing the conversation. Okay, great. Okay, well, it is 7:51 and that's everything that I have for you tonight. So unless there's, Tony, I see you answered your hand.
Just very quickly, the three follow-ups from our last couple of meetings. Number one is the height of the noise wall between Logan and First Avenue that's gone from 5 to 7 meters. We're waiting for an answer on that. Secondly, the 46-foot high wall at the dead end of First Avenue. And third, and the attached walkway to the plaza, which is under consideration. And the third thing is the revamped Logan Avenue between Dundas and, we believe, First Avenue, where the sidewalk is being widened and the more parking is going to be allowed on that street. From the meeting I had with Paula Fletcher's office this week, they noted that on Logan Avenue between January 23rd and April 25, that 20 or 30 of the parking spaces will be taken away by Metrolinx for the staging area and the work crews, etc. So that's all part and parcel of that. That's even before the bridges and the new bridges installed, which won't happen. And I guess the Logan Bridge is between January 23 and April 25. So it's around the same time, that two-year time frame. So that was the third point. Just the small points that I keep following up on, because as you know, Teresa, we're trying to get answers to that for the community.
Yeah, definitely. And so I need to dig into this 2030 parking space specific comment. The additional questions, I know we're just being approved. So if you haven't received those already, I know they have been drafted and are just going through approval.
Yeah, I haven't heard back from Mark yet, but that's okay. I'm sure I will.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Tony. And Catherine.
Hi, everybody. Being the Leslieville BIA representative and knowing from the optics from an economic development perspective and the community of Leslieville, I'd be remiss if I did not state that if there was to be a name for the station, that of course this BIA and the Leslieville community would prefer the name to be Leslieville if we're going to go down that road. So maybe until the naming of the naming competition of the station actually occurs, maybe we can ensure that to represent everybody here, we say Riverside and Riverside/Leslieville.
Yeah, I think that's how most of our documents are starting to trend, so we don't lose sight of some of the technical work that has occurred and some of the, you know, public involvement that's occurred up to this point. So thank you for that, Catherine. And I don't know if everybody agrees with that, but that was really the direction we were headed and making sure we were not leaving off Riverside. I think that's what the big issue was, is that where we were, where things had gone. So Tony, did you re-raise your hand or was that still up?
Sorry.
Okay. Okay, Catherine, thank you. And Shelley, I see your comment there about the where it's defined. And then there's one last competition question here, I think, regarding what's in the competition for First Avenue. And I think what we've heard from Tony and others is that that whole area is included in the design competition right now where the townhomes are. But
I'd like to clarify what basically we've agreed to is in the design competition should just be the wall at the dead end of First Avenue. It should not include the walkway and the plaza, which SVN is in the process of designing. Just the 46-foot high wall at the end of First Avenue. 14 meters for those of you who are don't think in Imperial.
Thank you. Okay, we will get that documented into the zone in the design brief.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Okay, well, John, Mark, any parting shots from Metrolink?
Just want to say very much. Yeah. I thought it was a really good meeting, as usual. Got through a lot and really enjoyed the conversation on the station designs for sure. So thank you.
And I'll get firm responses on the conflict of issue or conflict of interest issue relating to jurors, either, you know, having community members, you know, acting as on the design professionals team and the jury, or conversely, the design professionals having active projects with Metrolinx.
Okay. Thank you, John. And Rosemary, I see your final comment here about the video of the line to give to bidders. Certainly something that we can consider in our public involvement strategy that we're going to put together for our next discussion. So thank you for that reminder. Shelley, anything from the community before we wrap up?
I think that's it. I was going to touch on the video as well. Rosemary did it. I think it's a great idea to have the walkthrough, the walking tour filmed, and even to put up the station designs and to capture some, put them in the parks and have people come up and capture anecdotal evidence as people in the community are talking about them, and then and include that. I mean, I think all of that is capturing the public opinion and comments. It's all really, really useful to the competition. So
like it. Okay, well, thank you for that closing thought. So next week we will walk through the design brief, and we will walk through the public involvement approaches that we can consider in the green bar for the schedule. So thank you, everybody, and I hope you have a lovely evening. Good night.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.